For today's question, we are looking at what are five conversations you find yourself having regularly, and what are the beliefs behind them? Again, this question, this series of questions, is coming from my speaking coach, Jamia, who is a wonderful conversationalist, wonderful speaker, thought-provoking in her own right, and these questions are definitely thought-provoking for me. So these five conversations that I find myself having regularly, a couple of them tie back most definitely to similar beliefs behind them. You know, this is a different question to consider than the five questions people ask me most often. That's a totally different question, right? And I don't know if the fact that the five questions people ask me the most often, not tying to the five conversations I find myself having regularly, the ones I want to talk about, I don't know if that says that maybe I need to examine what I'm talking about with people more often or not. But let me go through and list these five conversations quickly, and then I'll dive deeper into, you know, why I guess that I have them, and some of the deeper beliefs behind them. One of those conversations has to do with my plans for content, products, and events for Association Chat, which is my online community. The second has to do with the future of voice-first content and skills. The third has to do with trust and how to build it online and in associations. The fourth has to do with betrayal and in friendship and business. Specifically, it has to do with people trying to, you know, get away with something in business. And the fifth is the role of curiosity in testing assumptions. So, like I said, this is different. These are different conversations I have than those when people actually drive the conversation and ask me specific questions. Because I got to thinking about that. I tried to answer that question first, and those are very different. Maybe I'll answer those in a different post. I think when you build something or are in the process of building it, it's natural to want to talk about it. I get excited about the plans for Association Chat, and so it's very, very difficult for me not to talk about what's happening with my business all the time. And because I'm a little quirky, I tend to share the things that are either extremely mundane but under control, and so like the underlying message of me sharing that is, look at me, I've got this stuff under control, but it's like, who cares type of stuff. Or I share these plans that seem impossible or impractical and require more resources and collaborations, and mostly, you know, I'm sharing those things because I have this idea that you don't get if you don't ask, and who knows what kind of connections some people have. You know, what I'm almost superstitious about not sharing is I am a little bit weird, I guess, or superstitious about sharing things that are in the works right now. I'm almost always planting seeds for other things, ideas for down the road, almost always, whether I even realize it or not. I am having conversations, I'm asking questions, or I'm talking to people who I know could play a role down the line in some of these bigger ideas that I have. But what I don't share necessarily is I don't share what I'm in the thick of doing at the moment until it seems like it's just about to happen. Like, I try to hold that really close, because I just am afraid that something's going to happen to slow it down, and I want to make those things happen. So I usually am in a rush to try to actualize things that are in the works. Talking about the future for voice, that's another topic, another conversation I end up in a lot. Talking about the future for voice first technology is something that I love to talk about, like how we use smart speakers for content and skills. It's also, you know, I mean, yes, there's a business reason for the, like, why I would talk about this. I do produce skills, flash briefings. I'm developing some other skills for myself and a few clients. But my interest is beyond all that. Like, I don't want to spend all my time developing these skills for clients. I'm mostly doing it because I love creating content for the flash briefings. I love exploring what the possibilities are as far as developing skills beyond the flash briefings, which are, you know, more to be like something that's good for a utility or serve as a resource. And I jumped onto using voice quickly because I've been waiting my whole life for the ability to walk anywhere and just speak things into existence. I mean, this is like as close to, you know, like not being God, but kind of, I guess. It's like magic, right? So I have my questions answered as soon as I utter a thought. This seems splendid. It seems like a great idea. And it's such a useful technology, you know. My mother doesn't have this in her house yet, but I want to set things up. She's, you know, elderly. She lives out, you know, in the house that I grew up in, which is just out in the middle of nowhere, in Southwest Missouri. So states and states away. It would take me almost an entire day of driving to get to her, you know. So I can drop in on my elderly mother in another state and talk to her to make sure she's okay. I could open an intercom system in her house through her smart speaker so that I could hear if she cried out or needed help or couldn't move or if her phone wasn't working or if she lost her phone. You know, I can do that, which is something that you couldn't say several years back. I want to be able to increase interaction between me and a content creator or a host so that in something similar to what you see, like if you have the Peloton cycling app and you see how the hosts, when they're doing live shows with their online audiences too, how they'll bring in those, they'll call out those online people who are participating in a good way, saying, you know, congratulations, this is your, you know, 500th ride or something. I want to do something, have something where you're able to interact like that to give feedback on the other side of it. Like when you're doing the Peloton app, for example, you're able to high five other people who are watching live. You're able to interact with those other people and post things, you know, to the group so that it's like you can celebrate with other people. I think we should do that with all podcast hosts. I think we should be able to anyway. If it's similar to what you see with Facebook watch parties or like on Anchor with submitting responses, you know, you can engage and interact with hosts and with other listeners as an experience is happening. So we should be able to do that. And I want to explore that in voice. I think there's just so much more that we can do, and we're just on the cusp of doing some of it. Trust is a big topic for me. I had about 3 different situations happen last year when I faced some unpleasant realizations about intentions of people around me and those trying to get closer to me and some of the financial motivations behind it. And you know, it really bothered me that these people saw me as an easy mark. So that's one thing. But in each case, I was able to move past it. I was able to move past them and understand that for many people, business isn't meant to be personal, and that their attempts to manipulate using everything from, you know, emotions, sales tactics, the law of reciprocation to false friendship, it wasn't a problem for them because they saw their end goal and they felt it made sense. Never mind my own work, my vision, my intentions, my beliefs. You know, they were intent and focused on what they were trying to achieve. And rather than stay in victim mode or live in anger, what I've tried to do is take a deep dive into the topic of trust. You know, I've been reading books by people like Rachel Botsman and Maria Konnikova, and Robert Greene, and uncovering how trust is important for growth of big things, but it can also take down, you know, those mighty efforts when that trust is misplaced. So it's important to have respect about the role that trust plays. And I'm actually beginning to wonder if associations don't have a massive trust problem on their hands that they need to address. I had an interview last week where on the podcast I interviewed somebody. We were talking about artificial intelligence, or what he calls augmented intelligence. And he was talking about going to a conference recently, and that their big thing they were talking about is how it's about the trust algorithm and trying to focus on that. And he said, but associations don't have a trust algorithm problem because we have loads of trust. Everybody trusts us. And when he said that, we ended up talking about other things, and he's brilliant and I love talking with him. But as soon as he said that, I immediately was like, is that true? Is it true? Do associations automatically have loads of trust? And if it ever was true, is it true anymore? You know? And I don't know that it is. And so one of the things that I'm wanting to dig deeper into, and that I've been having more conversations about because of that, is that, you know, I don't think that associations have the trust they used to. Two of the three big professional societies that I belong to had to handle very similar challenges. Two of the three that I belong to had these big public outcries in the past 5 years about issues where their ethics were called into question. And it had to do with stealing someone else's brand, well-known brand that's from their community. In another case, it had to do with, these discussions about, did they steal their members' intellectual property? And I have to say that, you know, there's a lot of discussion. I've seen session after session after session talking about net promoter scores. But who cares if they would suggest you to another one of their peers, if what they say right after that suggestion is, but be careful about sharing your trade secrets or your brand or your intellectual property, because they might take it. This does not bode well for any kind of organization of people, in my opinion, much less associations. But, when you're trying to build an online community and instill trust, that one of the things I talk about most, and I'm talking about more in my talks, is about fast-tracking trust. So it doesn't make sense to make these claims about transparency, you know, which just comes across as some kind of jargony joke, when no one trusts you anymore. In fact, no one, I think, or most people don't trust you when you say you practice transparency at your organization. I'd say that that makes them put themselves on guard even more, because you want them, you know, because they want you to believe they practice transparency. And immediately people, I think, these days don't trust that. So I guess that leads to my fifth common conversation I find myself in, and that has to do with testing your assumptions. So, okay, you know, I've made a lot of assumptions here that maybe that's the case, but it's more like suppositions. It's more like hypotheticals. I am questioning, I'm asking, I'm curious to see if that's true. I don't know that it is, but my hypothesis is that this is the case. I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to keep asking questions to find out if that's true. Doesn't mean I'm convinced it is, but it means that I think it's a good question to ask. Life's boring when you don't ask more questions and dig deeper. Our assumptions keep us safe, but they also keep us bored, and they keep us boring. And I try to make curiosity and testing my assumptions an ongoing practice, which I think also requires a deliberate effort, at least for me, but which pays off enormously. So that's my story and my answer for today. What are five conversations you find yourself having regularly, and what are the beliefs behind them? please share your thoughts with me on Anchor or on social media. I'd love to hear what you think. And Jamia, if you're listening to this, this one was kind of an interesting question. A long question to answer, but a good one. And I will talk to you soon.